Jesus.
Yellow, what?
I'm walking here.
Good afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Wednesday. To get you through this crisis in a world where few things are reliable, we are reliable. The Jason Rancho, we're live on AM 770 KTTH, streaming live on all those smart speakers like Amazon Echo and Google Home. We got a lot to get to. We only have 2 hours left to do it. We're going to talk with a business owner who has already been dealing with the nonsense of CHOP. Well, now that CHOP is gone, what's the next step? We're going to talk with Mason McDermott from Cartender. I'm going to take you through a new poll that shows some good news for Donald Trump as it relates to his handling of the coronavirus. Plus, more controversy in the city of Sela. This time after they removed chalk art that has to do with Black Lives Matter. We're going to get into that and so much more. This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by the KTTH smartphone app. If you don't have it, you should download it immediately. All you have to do is text the keyword APP, A-P-P, to 1-800-465-8770. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
CHOP has been chopped. I cannot stand that play on words. And yet, I've seen it so many times today, mostly from national media.
So lazy. So lazy.
On the chopping block this morning, CHOP has officially been chopped. I mean, it's technically true, or is it? The question I have is, where are these activists going to go next? Because they're obviously not happy that they lost this space earlier this morning, 5 a.m. Bright and early, cops showed up, took control back of the area. Over the course of the next 48 hours, there is an emergency decree in place which allows officers to make arrests for anyone who doesn't leave the zone. Lots of cops are there. Over 30 people were arrested this morning, most of whom are almost certainly not going to face any kind of punishment, because why not? It is still Seattle. We don't punish in Seattle. Now, presumably the folks who were there who maybe committed an assault, maybe they're actually going to be punished. We'll see. All of this was avoidable. Could have been avoided. The death of a 16-year-old kid and a 19-year-old kid, those deaths were avoidable if the mayor and this council took this seriously. But instead of stopping what should have been stopped, they decided to let it flourish. And by flourish, I simply mean let them think it was flourishing, because it never flourished. CHOP was a failure from the beginning. The first day was the only quote-unquote success, in the sense of not a whole lot of violence, at least none that I saw. But you can't just cede over 6 blocks of city property to protesters under the threat of violence. You can't do that, because you know what message that sends? It says all you have to do is commit other acts of violence and you will get your way, at least temporarily. After 19-year-old Lorenzo was shot and killed over some argument regarding fireworks, Mayor Jenny Durkan came out and said, look, it's too dangerous. We have to close up shop. Now, we were talking about how dangerous it was every single day leading into that shooting. Leading up to that shooting. I've been on Tucker Carlson's show almost every single day talking about this. I have pieces in Newsweek, the National Review, and the Daily Signal from the Heritage Foundation, all saying the same thing. And we were ignored. And unfortunately, it cost the life of a 19-year-old. But even after that, did the city move? Did the city change things up? Did the city close this space down? No. And as a result, then a 16-year-old kid was shot to death. And a 14-year-old shot in serious condition at Harborview. That's on the mayor. She didn't pull the trigger. She didn't pull the trigger. She didn't murder anybody. But she allowed a space to exist that facilitated that homicide. And that's on her. She was asked earlier today whether or not she takes any blame, she bears any responsibility. She didn't answer that question at all. She doesn't answer questions. She talks around them. Leaders speak directly to the voters. Leaders answer questions clearly. She's not a leader. She's terrified of a movement that is kind of scary. Because these are true believers. These are fringe true believers. And some of them will stop at nothing until they get their way. Some of them have said, look, we're going to get our way by any means necessary. Look what happened in New York City last night. They, by the way, have their own version of a CHAZ. It's a City Hall autonomous zone. Black Lives Matter there in New York City, they pushed a major defunding bill against the NYPD. A department with police they once called heroes after 9/11, but now they've decided to turn on a dime. They got the council and the mayor to cut $1 billion in funding from their budget, which will leave the city more dangerous. You're seeing right now an increase in crime, an insane increase in crime and violence. And at that moment, you're deciding to cut $1 billion from their budget? How is that the right move? How is that about public safety? New York decided to give in to the mob. Seattle decided to give in to the mob. What do they have to show for it? Here, two dead kids. The IRS is increasing the number of officers in Washington State, and if you owe money, they're going to come for you. So please don't try to take on the IRS yourself. Contact our local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn, at Nunn Better Tax Resolution. N-U-N-N, Nunn Better Tax Resolution. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
CHOP, as we used to know it, is now officially done. But what comes next? And how does this community get back to some semblance of normalcy? Cartender is a business in the zone, about a block away, that suffered an attempt, we should say, by a would-be arsonist, allegedly by the name of Richard Hanks. He was arrested for the arson. And, of course, we talked to Mason McDermott, who is the son of the owner of the business, as they try to deal with not just an arsonist, but, of course, the mob of CHOP protesters that threatened to do harm to the business if that individual wasn't turned over. So how does it feel now to be somewhat back to normal? Let's check in with Mason McDermott. Welcome back to the show, Mason.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. The question is, how is it going for you? Obviously, this morning's news had to have been a welcome development.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. It's good to see that something's being done, you know. 20 days too late, but it's good to see that they're starting to make somewhat of an effort to resolve the issue that we're having here.
Obviously, you guys are part of a lawsuit, a class action lawsuit against the city over what happened. Do you think that played a role in moving the mayor?
Not really. Personally, I don't. But maybe, you know, I would hope that that would. But I would say some other things maybe moved or urged her to do what is being done today.
Mm-hmm. When you say that it's about 20 days too late, take us through what you guys have been dealing with over the course of this pretty much national embarrassment.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely is frustrating. You know, we're here every night and we have our security guys here every night, and I've been here quite a bit. And, you know, there's shootings up here every night, mm-hmm. and people are losing their lives for what reason, you know? It's very sad.
It is. You're making reference, of course, to the two deaths that happened, two homicides, a 16-year-old kid and a 19-year-old kid who didn't have to die, but unfortunately they were in a position where the mayor could have done something, the council could have done something, but they chose not to. When you think about the lack of leadership in the city, how does it impact you and just like how you vote and how you engage civically?
Well, I think that when this, I guess this is a prime example of what happens, you know, this is a true show of colors of those people that we've elected to be in our, you know, city offices. And it doesn't show well for them. And hopefully this is opens people's eyes enough, you know, to make a difference.
Do you think it is going to make a difference? What is your level of anxiety that what happened earlier today is going to stick?
Oh, I'm sure it'll stick, you know. It's interesting, you know, nothing's been done about this until, you know, it directly affected the people who were our elected officials, if you will. You know, until they showed up at their front doors, you know, it was the summer of love. And, oh, look, it is violent. Oh, look, it is kind of scary.
How appreciative are you right now of the East Precinct getting ready to be restaffed?
Oh, I think it's great. I think it's awesome. I just, and curious to see how it plays out from here, you know? Mm-hmm. Now they're all not centrally located in one place, and they're all just hanging out around the perimeter of what used to be CHOP. So,
do you think they're going to try to make a move to take back the space at all?
That's kind of what we're hearing. We'll see how that all plays out. I know that, you know, I'm hoping that Seattle PD is preparing for that, and I understand that they're not going to allow that to happen again. So
good. Well, hopefully it doesn't. Last question for you. Do you still have any fear of retribution? Obviously, when you were dealing with that would-be arsonist, the mob showed up to try to take him from you. You ended up passing him along because the cops weren't going to show up. He ends up getting away later, by the way, to get arrested by cops in White Center for another crime that's alleged. Do you think that any of the CHOP protesters are going to blame you for them losing their spot there?
I mean, I think so, to some degree, you know, there's people that walk by the property every day and harass the people around the business and, you know, yell obscenities towards us if we're out there. So it's unfortunate, but we do our best to, you know, stay level headed and just do what we're here to do.
Yeah. Well, look, stay safe. Hopefully the peace will continue. I'm grateful that the police were able to get in. I'm grateful that your business still stands despite some of the disruption and the chaos. Again, we've been talking with Mason McDermott from Cartender in Seattle. Mason, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason. Take care.
Absolutely. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
Survey data coming out from the Pew Research Center shows a rather significant bump in Republicans who are skeptical of anything surrounding the coronavirus. It went from 47% back in April to 63%. So that's a huge jump. Now, when you look at the Democrats, not so much. They do not think the crisis is exaggerated. I think it went from 14% to 18%, holding that view that it is exaggerated. So that's not really significant. But when you look at all adults, regardless of their political beliefs, their ideology, it goes from 29% to now 38% of folks believe that the coronavirus is exaggerated. And I've got to assume that that means a whole bunch of independents are in that group, or perhaps someone who is inconsistently Democrat or inconsistently Republican, someone sort of down the middle. Now, data like that is going to have a significant implication on the election. Because if you generally assume that a Republican is going to vote for Trump and a Democrat is going to vote for Biden, you're talking about the independents yet again deciding the election. And when you have more and more independents who are looking at what's going on with the coronavirus and they're hearing a message from the president that essentially says, look, we need to reopen this economy. We got to be safe. We got to be smart about it, but we have to reopen the economy. My assumption is they're looking at the data and they're saying, oh, the president's on the right side of this. The folks on the left who are telling me that I can go to a protest, but I can't go play tennis, that's crazy. I don't want anything to do with them. This data is actually really, really good. I think it's part of the reason why President Trump is taking a little bit different of a tone on masks. We played that audio last hour. I know he's saying, oh, no, what are you talking about? Wear masks? No, he doesn't. He doesn't wear masks. I've never seen him wear a mask. Maybe you'll find a couple photos, but he very consistently does not wear a mask. And that's fine. That's his prerogative. But his message is changing because I think he's trying to appeal to the independents who realize, yeah, we can be smart, we can be reasonable, we can be rational about it, but we also need to reopen the economy. And a lot more people are coming up and saying, look, I don't necessarily trust Dr. Fauci anymore, or as much as I used to. One of those people is Meghan McCain over at The View. She said this on her show today.
Even for people like me, I have a lot of questions for Dr. Fauci. I'm 100% willing to say on television, I do not have faith and trust in Dr. Fauci in the way that I did. And it has to do with the fact that we have conversations on this show, which I think we're all in agreement about people wearing masks and being responsible. And we're all in agreement on that. And then I see a giant pride march in Chicago, which is great that people are out marching in any other time other than a pandemic right here. And we're not supposed to be this close together. I'm not supposed to be within 6 feet of people. So the narrative continues to confuse me. Republicans are the devil. Fox News is the devil. But protesters for Pride and protesters for Black Lives Matter, it's fine. And the pandemic doesn't exist. And that's not the narrative.
Nobody
said that. Yes, they did. We just talked yesterday about a whole study that basically said that. That's exactly what they said.
I think that's actually true.
I'm the only conservative on this show, and I leave this place, and all I do is pretty much consume conservative media. So I was just trying to explain what conservatives are seeing. And as much as we want to trash Fox News, Tucker Carlson has the highest approval ratings and numbers in Fox News history right now, partly because he's saying in a much more eloquent way what I'm saying right now. And there's a lot of anger and frustration about this hypocrisy. And we can say, forget it here, and we can talk about the Lincoln Project, and we can say, vote Republicans all out, but it is making the culture war divide even further, and maybe that's what we want.
So she's getting very defensive there on purpose because she is telling the truth when she says we are getting mixed messages, and it starts with the left taking a position that it is okay to go out. These were public health officials who signed an open letter saying people can go out to protest for Black Lives Matter. It is worth the risk. Because racism is more prevalent than the coronavirus, more deadly than the coronavirus, which, by the way, is factually inaccurate. But that's what they said. Gay pride marches, as she just pointed out, are happening at a time when we were told to stay indoors, stay away from people within 6 feet, wear a mask. And Whoopi and Joy Behar, No one's saying that, what?
This is not about politics.
It's not? Because when conservatives went out to protest, we were told, very specifically, we want to see grandma die. When activists came out for Black Lives Matter, they said, yeah, we like that cause, we back it. That's political.
People who are conservative, people who are Republican, people who are Democrat, they're all getting hit the same way. People are dying. And so for me, I don't see where the question is. It's not about your rights. It's about there's a thing in the country. There's a poison in the country. And all we need to try to do, and we've said it to everybody. We said it about the beaches in Florida. And we, you know, sort of shame people into making changes.
I love that because even in her examples, she's talking about people going to a beach, which is very, very healthy for the most, unless it's a crazy crowded beach. You can go outside and socially distance. Clean, fresh air is healthy. But even in that, she doesn't say, oh, remember, we went after the Black Lives Matter protest. No, you didn't. That's why she doesn't mention it.
We have talked about the fact that everybody has to get on
board
to stop the spread of this thing. We said it to the marchers. We said it to everybody.
The marchers?
No one is making a distinction.
Do you have audio of that? Because you realize that if she ever went after the marchers, we would play them and say, you know, good for you for your consistency.
You know what? I don't have that audio. I never was able to find that.
How weird is that?
So that's the point I was trying to make, is that the leaders in place, like Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci, I think should have been screaming bloody murder when all the protesting and rioting started. And I do think there was an impression from some people that it was okay because the protesting and the existential crisis of police brutality, which we can have another conversation at another time, was more important than the virus and the outbreak. And people have different opinions on that. There are people that agree with that. But the idea that we're going to sit here and say it's just Republicans.
She doesn't take a breath for just a second, man. Oh my
God. Impressive.
Is it impressive or annoying? Maybe both.
Yes. The answer to that question is yes.
Okay.
Not wearing masks is just intellectually dishonest.
No, I don't think that's what she was saying. I think she was saying, because Tucker Carlson was saying wear masks. I think what the point that the piece was making that Sonny is talking about is they were saying that because so many folks on Fox News poo-pooed it and said you don't need to do it.
They didn't poo-poo it. I watch Fox. I'm on Fox.
You watch
I'm
the
familiar with Fox.
The Tucker Carlson show?
Yes.
She says Coulson.
Yeah, with Jason Rance. They didn't poo-poo it. Some poo-pooed it, but the station on its own did not.
It had an impact that people did not want to see.
And the protesting and rioters did not.
And I'm saying
three different
yes,
studies.
No
impact whatsoever.
It's the different.
Protesting
no
and
one.
The rioting,
no one has
no
said
impact.
That.
It's
no.
Just.
Did no one say that, or did we just spend yesterday 10 minutes, go check the podcast, on a study that literally said the opposite, which was not only did the protest for Black Lives Matter not cause a spread in the coronavirus, it caused people to stay at home who weren't participating, which then cut down on the spread of the coronavirus. That was yesterday, right?
That was yesterday.
Almost at this time.
According to my records, yes, that was yesterday.
But they say, oh, the studies aren't saying that. Yes, they are. If you're going to have an opinion that's different than mine, that's fine. If you want to debate Meghan McCain, go for it. But at least go at it with some semblance of facts on your side. Go in it with some level of understanding of what's actually out there.
Fox News. No one has said that. Listen. You want to fight about it? We can fight about it.
I don't want to fight about it.
What we're saying is
acting like the protest in Chicago didn't just happen. And again, I just think we all have to be. This show is on the same page. I will give you that. I think all the hosts on that show are on the same page. But I do not think Americans are on the same page as this. And I know when someone like me is frustrated, when it feels like the people in places of power, like Dr. Fauci, are not going on TV and screaming bloody murder about the dangers of this, and we're seeing spikes everywhere. I understand why there's frustration.
We saw the spikes at the same time that we saw the protests, the rioting, the looting, and the peaceful protests. As that happened, we saw increase in coronavirus cases. Also, we saw an increase in testing. And public health officials who are leftists and View co-hosts who are leftists will pretend it wasn't that big of a deal. They won't call out the I saw a lot of people calling out the Michigan protests because they had white dudes with guns, which different than the white dudes with guns at CHOP where the city wanted to pretend it wasn't really a big deal. But you don't hear anyone calling. The only thing you hear from the local government, here at least in Washington, was, you know, we want you to go ahead, just wear your mask. Make sure you wear your mask. Go to Olympia, you want grandma to die. But no, it doesn't happen. It didn't happen, Peyton. Didn't happen.
Really glad that we haven't covered any Inslee press conferences lately. I don't need to hear which one of my family members he thinks we're trying to kill.
You don't have a list though, right? I mean, the way you just...
No, I...
Okay.
I wear my mask. He thinks I don't. He thinks I want to kill my aunt, my uncles.
But you don't.
I don't. I love them dearly.
But I do too. They're nice. They're nice people. I'm like...
They're listeners, yeah. So...
That's what I said. They're good people. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. When we come back, we're going to dive into the big local. We're going to head on over to the city of Sela for another Black Lives Matter issue, another controversy, really? Oh my gosh. We're going to get into that and so much more when we return on The Jason Rancho.
Olympia, Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the Big Local on The Jason Rancho Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, where we completely ignore every story coming out of Seattle because the media is already hyper-focused on Seattle. And instead, we spend time talking about the communities you live in and care about most. There's a holiday this weekend. Holiday that usually has a lot of fireworks. Now, of course, I saved the fireworks show in the city of Marysville and Carnation.
You're so heroic, Jason.
I am. Not all heroes wear capes. Sometimes we're just talk show hosts.
I'm so impressed with your admiration to just help the community every day.
I did it. Not for the recognition that I didn't actually get ever. I did it for the people. So in Marysville, like we said, they're going to do their fireworks show at a different spot. and it's going to go higher up in the air, so you don't really have to leave your home. You can look at it from your backyard. In Tacoma, they're doing things a little bit differently. Because usually, you've got the Cheney Stadium doing the fireworks for the Tacoma Rainiers. And they're going to do it again this year. But they're going to do it again without anyone in the actual stadium because of coronavirus. But they're doing something similar to what is happening in Marysville. Starting on Friday, around 9:45-ish, they're going to do their fireworks show. The parking lot is going to be closed to the public because of the coronavirus. But you know what they're going to do? They're streaming it on their Facebook account, which sounds awful.
Minor league sports will do anything to gain traction like that.
Do you get traction by looking at fireworks via Facebook Live?
They're going to get more than they would if they didn't do fireworks. Then yeah, they're going to have, you know, if they have 25 views, it's 25 more views than they're going to have if they did nothing.
That's really small-time thinking. 25 views?
Look, their entire season just got canceled. They're trying to do something down there in Tacoma.
You can still gather nearby. You just can't actually go into the stadium or the parking lot. Just obviously they want you to practice social distancing, which do that. But don't watch it online. If you're going to suffer through a silly fireworks show, you might as well just do it in person.
The Cheney Stadium fireworks show, I've seen it a handful of times. It's a good fireworks show, and there's lots of places outside the stadium to go to. Hey. They have a Fred Meyer across the street. Foss High School is right there, and you can go stand on the tennis courts and watch this. That's good family fun.
I don't disagree with the latter point you just made.
You just don't like fireworks.
I will simply correct the record that all fireworks shows are exactly the same.
They're not.
They're all good for the first 17 and a half seconds.
You're wrong.
And then you realize it's the exact same thing, but in slightly different colors and at slightly different heights.
Have you ever been to the Gasworks fireworks show?
I've been to every fireworks show
in the history of mankind.
In the history of mankind since the firework was created in 1776.
This is why you don't have friends. The Gasworks show is great with the helicopter.
The city we don't talk about?
Yeah. Yes.
So you're breaking the rules?
I am.
I break the rules. You don't break the rules.
Okay, I won't break the rules. We'll talk about that next segment.
No, we won't.
I can't tease that. I can't make my own tease because it's your show.
We're not talking about that because it's my show. There's another controversy surrounding Black Lives Matter in the city of Sela. Now a lawyer is involved. The city decided to remove some chalk drawing art on a street corner that had a message that was supportive of Black Lives Matter, saying it essentially qualifies, according to the city code, as graffiti. So they ended up removing it. But Lisa Draney, a mother and a resident who took her kids down there to see the work of art, tells Kima TV she is not happy.
The chalk art, it's about the message. You know, they don't like the message. I want to teach them to recognize that if they are in a position to be able to make a difference or to support someone else, that they should do that.
Yes, but you're not really getting behind that. You're getting behind some artwork that makes you feel good, certainly, and it can be inspirational, but that's not actually getting anything done. And the city is saying, we have this ordinance. We got complaints from neighbors. We took it down because that's the law. It had nothing to do with the content. We would do this for anyone who ends up complaining and it violates the code. But not everyone buys that, particularly Julie Sweden, who lives nearby.
I think anyone would look at that and could see that it was art and that it was demonstrating our helplessness as a society in the face of what's going on with the police and what's going on with brutality against against people, the inequities, the injustices that are out there. We need to definitely try to do something.
Thank you, privileged white lady. I really appreciate it. I'm sure you're posting on your Facebook page right now about how heroic you are. The municipal code doesn't say anything about chalk specifically, but it does say something about graffiti. Now, whether or not you agree with the position that it is like graffiti is up to you. It's certainly subjective, but that's what the city is saying. And unless you have any evidence that they're not going after, like, some MAGA artwork, then just assume it's a city government that is responding to the complaints of your neighbors, not going out of their way to find out what's going on some random city street. And if you really want to test this, how about this? Why don't you go ahead and put MAGA 2020 hashtag don't wear a mask. Put that down in chalk art and see what happens. Oh, you wouldn't. You would actually, if you saw that, you would call the city and complain and hope that the city uses the ordinance to go after graffiti to take it down. Right? Right? Kind
of. I think the city of Sela, if they were responsible for treating this as graffiti, they need to rethink how they, what they consider graffiti.
Okay, and that's fair. That's a fair point to take. But that's what they consider to be graffiti. Now, it actually all got resolved, even though a lawyer is now involved, seemingly threatening to sue. At least it seems like they're setting that up. We're going to try to get the lawyer on the show so I can yell at him and then show you how I should have gone to law school instead of choosing a career in radio.
You read a law book one time, though, so you're certified.
Two times.
Two times? The same book or two different?
It was the same because I was doing it for homework. I mean, it was in 2003, but I mean, I read it.
I'm so impressed, Jason.
I didn't read all the chapters. I read the ones that were relevant to this thing I was doing, but still. The Sela School District said, hey, kids, you can use Sela Middle School to put the message up. And that's where the city can't do anything about it. So about 150 people showed up. And they put up a new message that said, racial equality, we care about black lives. Now, the one thing, again, I'll ask people to do is don't just say you care about black lives and then take a photo and post it on your Instagram. Actually do something that suggests you legitimately care about black lives. I don't know what that means to you in your particular neighborhood, but putting that message down doesn't actually mean anything.
Writing it in chalk isn't enough to prove it?
No, it is not. Perry Cooper, who's the spokesperson for SeaTac Airport, he says, guess what? Traffic is starting to pick up.
We are definitely getting busier than what we've seen over the last couple of weeks, but it's still a fraction of what we should normally see this time of year.
But the question remains, is it safe? We're seeing an increase in the coronavirus cases. Cooper's all like, Tacoma TV, yeah, it's safe. We got masks. That's the requirement, plus this.
Doing more cleaning than we've done before. We're trying to get a rotation that's frequents the areas where there are high-touch spaces.
Andrea's flying to Maryland for some reason, even though there's no real reason to go to Maryland, especially now. It just seems like a horrible place to be. But she's all like, I love the new guidelines.
It makes me feel a lot safer to fly. We almost canceled our trip.
Oh, my gosh. You should have canceled your trip. Because Maryland? Where are you going? Well, it depends where, I guess. Are you going to Baltimore?
Hopefully not.
Professor Joseph Allen, he's a professor of public health over at Harvard, which means we're going to pretend he's smart, is going to give us some very basic rules of the road as it relates to traveling via airplane. Sorry, I mixed up my puns.
I think there's a couple things you have to ask yourself before you fly. One, is it necessary? Do you really need to take that trip? Two, do you have any personal risk factors which put you at greater risk for COVID-19?
So in other words, don't be a dum-dum. Which is valid advice. Do you need to travel? No, I want to, because I've been stuck at home, and it's the 4th of July, and we have 4 days off. Do you have any underlying issue? I don't know. Does mental instability count? Because if so, then yes. Sudden bursts of anger at my staff? Then yes.
You have lots of that.
That qualifies. Asthma? I still don't know. Which is a legitimate concern, and every time I Google asthma and coronavirus, I get different answers.
Maybe you just don't travel. I'll do the traveling. You stay at home.
I'm going to assume that asthma puts me at an increased risk, because when I get a normal flu or cold, it's annoying. It's awful. And then finally, the AP says about 600 traps have been set up to catch the Asian giant murder hornets. All across Whatcom County, they've been set up by the Washington State Department of Agriculture, which is more than double the number that they had already put out and that citizens had already put out. So we're talking about Blaine and Custer and Bellingham. I looked up what the traps are. They're little crates with a stick and a string attached, and when the bee goes under it, you pull the stick.
How long do you have to camp out next to the stick?
I mean, it could be for months.
Wow. We have
dedicated people.
Dedicated trappers.
One request I have moving forward to the media members who are listening to me. God bless all of you. I love you all. I mean, not you, but I love everybody else. Stop putting so many photos of the bees up, because they are frightening and disturbing and disgusting, and it makes me uncomfortable.
Isn't it the media's job to strike fear into everyone?
Yes, it is. Good point. Fair point. Point taken. But just on this one story, I could use a little less of the crazy, scary-looking bees. That's all I ask.
This is the one story you want the media to lie about.
I want legit fake news. Just pretend it doesn't exist because it's freaking me out. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, Todd Myers from the Washington Policy Center is going to cut through all the good and the useless coming from the Climate Pledge arena. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH, streaming on all those KTTH smartphone apps that are hopefully on your phone. If they're not on your phone, well, that's silly. You should download the app. Text APP to 1-800-465-8770. The NHL Seattle team secured the naming rights for their stadium with Amazon, but Amazon's name and their logo, you're not going to be able to find it at the arena, at least not on top. Instead, it's going to be called the Climate Pledge Arena in what's the best example of a literal virtue signal. The owners of the arena claim that it's going to be the greenest ice in all of NHL, but my next guest is a little bit skeptical. Todd Myers is the director of the Center for the Environment over at the Washington Policy Center, and he joins me now. Todd, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So one of their green elements that they're touting at this arena is that they're going to have rainwater collected to make the ice for the hockey rink. Why does that not matter?
So what they're going to do is that the rain that falls off the roof goes into cisterns, and then they're going to use that to make ice. They use it for the ice. And they say that's going to be the greenest, except that the alternative would be to use water from the Seattle Public Utilities, which comes from the Tolt and Cedar River watersheds, which comes from rainwater. So instead of rainwater, they're going to use rainwater, just slightly to the west of where they would otherwise collect it. So there is no beneficial impact from collecting it off of the roof as opposed to letting it go into the Tolt and Cedar River watersheds.
Well, and you make the point in your blog over at the Washington Policy Center that, you know, the irony is that the water that they will allow people to consume doesn't come from rainwater at all. It comes directly from the city.
That's right. So it's actually illegal to use rainwater for human consumption. So they will still have to buy, and I would guess the majority of what they would buy in terms of water will come from Seattle Public Utilities. So it's not like this is saving money because they don't have to buy anything from Seattle Public Utilities. They will still have to do that. They will just buy slightly less.
So is there anything that they made in their announcement that you look at and say, okay, you know what, this actually does have some meaning when it comes to the environment?
So I, my initial reaction was like the reaction of many, which is that this was virtue signaling and sort of an eye roll of Climate Pledge Arena. But I will say that it's, in terms of environmental action, it is more likely that what Amazon does and what they're doing at the arena will be successful when you compare it to similar pledges by politicians in the state. Seattle and the state have constantly made pledges about how they're going to reach CO2 reduction targets, mm-hmm. and they have literally missed every single one of them. My guess is that Amazon and then Microsoft, which has made a similar one, and Walmart, which has made a similar one, will meet their targets because, you know, that's because they say it in public and their credibility is on the line for that. So the more I thought about it, the more I thought, okay, let's see how they do. And actually, I think this might be more likely to succeed than political alternatives.
And I am kind of curious to see as to whether or not folks who go down to the game and or whatever, we're a match, I don't know what they say for NHL. They go down, they realize that they're in this world in which they are supposed to be celebrating the environment. And, you know, in theory, it's supposed to inspire people to be a little bit more eco-conscious in their everyday decisions. But I'm wondering if it just means they're going to say, oh, I'm here, and it's an eco-friendly arena. That's all. I don't have to do anything.
And in fact, there is evidence that where government takes on environmental projects that people feel like they don't have to. There was a study that found that conservatives who are skeptical of climate change actually do more in their daily life to help the environment than people on the left who think climate change is a crisis. And to some, that's ironic. I think it is ironic, but it makes sense when you say, oh, well, now that government has taken it, I don't have to do it. Mm-hmm. So I think there is a danger of that. But I think the most effective environmental acts, whether it's on climate change or something else, are ones that people take personal responsibility for, or that businesses do. That's where we see the success. Where we see failure are politicians who get credit for making the promise, but when it fails, they don't get the accountability for failure.
Well, I mean, and that's Jay Inslee is a perfect example of that. This is a guy who's branded himself as this eco-warrior, and yet he has been a total failure when it comes to actually getting anything done on climate change.
Well, and the irony is that he has rejected and opposed not one but two carbon taxes. So you would think that with, you know, him calling it a climate crisis and everything, that he would support carbon taxes. He opposed the revenue neutral carbon tax because it didn't raise taxes. And then last year, a Democratic state senator, Senator Hobbs, actually proposed a tax increase carbon tax. And the governor opposed that as well because he wanted what's called a low carbon fuel standard. So the governor only agrees with climate action if it fits his agenda. And when it doesn't, he's more than happy to wait another year. And so as a result, we've waited 8 years.
Todd Myers is the director of the Center for the Environment over at the Washington Policy Center. We're talking about the Climate Pledge Arena. That is going to be the name of the NHL team's arena. Once they get the name figured out for the actual team, they'll be able to say, enter the Kraken or release the Kraken at the Climate Pledge Arena. Do you think it changes the potential name of the actual team?
Yeah, I think so the Edmonton Oilers have already taken the Oilers, but I think that probably was ruled out by this name, so...
I'm going with Seattle Freeze still. I think that's going to happen. How much of what's happening here do you ultimately think? I know you say you think that Amazon will hit their goals and Microsoft and all these companies that are publicly pledging to will hit their goals. But do you think that's because they have a legitimate interest in the environment, or is it a combination of wanting some sort of social currency so that progressive activists out there will stop attacking them and maybe even give them some support while also saving lots of money? Because the whole idea of like adopting some of these eco-friendly technologies, I would argue the reason, a big reason why conservatives will adopt some of them is because just ultimately it impacts our bank accounts.
Yeah, and I think it's great. Where we can align the incentives of the environment and personal finances, you should do that. And there's a lot of things that do that. With the case of the green ice, I think it's the opposite. I think they're going to spend a lot of money on cisterns and collecting that rainwater, and I think it would be far cheaper just to buy it from Seattle Public Utilities. So I do think that there definitely is a signaling element to this. But I don't doubt that folks at the top of Amazon and Jeff Bezos and others who made this decision, believe that climate change is a serious risk. So I think they feel like they can kill two birds with one stone. Mm-hmm. So, and having been, I used to be the, you know, communications director for both the Seattle Mariners and the Seattle Supersonics. So I sort of understand how sports teams make these decisions. And I think in the case of the greenest ice, what happens is they say, hey, let's do something like this. It sounds good. But since they're not experts and nobody checked it, I think they made a mistake. I think it's very unlikely that they go back now and say, you know, maybe this isn't the right thing. Maybe we're not actually helping here. I think they've already put the PR effort into it. And I think that's a real danger with politics, because once you say, oh, here's what I'm going to do, then politicians have an incentive to either double down on failure or deny that they failed. And we see that all the time, too. I think it's, you know, personal actions are much better, because if you do something and it doesn't save electricity or doesn't save gasoline, you don't have to go on Facebook and say, hey, I'm an idiot, I screwed up. You can just change it, which is good. We want people to be flexible and to learn and to respond to those good incentives. And it's the opposite sometimes when it comes to politics. They care more about their public image than the actual results.
So obviously, I know you don't design arenas for a living. You talk about environmental policy. But what is something that, or some things that the arena could actually do that would have a meaningful impact on the environment in a positive way?
So I think that the first thing that we have to do is to stop thinking about environmental impact in sort of narrowly and in a myopic way, say, okay, what can we do just within the confines of the arena to help the environment? Because a lot of things that we can do to help the environment, you can do things better elsewhere where it's really needed. If you want to help water quality and fish habitat, doing it around, you know, Queen Anne Hill is not the place you're going to do that. And so there are investments in things like that. Rather than spending the money on cisterns, they could do that. I do think that some of the stormwater retention that they're doing on site is good. That is a problem. Runoff harms fish, and we know that. So those sorts of things can be done on site. But I think if they really wanted to maximize the benefit to the environment, they should look outside the boundaries of the arena for things they can do to help and spend their money that way rather than, you know, using it as a PR opportunity.
Well, the traffic's going to be so bad, it's essentially going to force people to walk there. So there's less cars on the road. I suppose that's a thing. WashingtonPolicy.org is the place to go if you want to learn more about what Todd is up to. He's the director of the Center for the Environment at the Washington Policy Center. Again, the website, WashingtonPolicy.org. Todd Myers, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
It's always nice to talk with you.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. We're going to take a look at what's been going on at CHOP today. CHOP, as you know it, is finally done. We'll take you through this morning's events and all of the updates when we return on The Jason Rand Show.